Welcome to the First Group Trading Update. Throughout the call, all participants will be in listen-only mode, and afterwards, there will be a question and answer section. Just to remind you, this call is being recorded. Today, I'm pleased to present Matthew Gourgaury, Chief Executive, and Ryan Mackrow, Chief Financial Officer, and David Martin, Chairman. Please begin your meeting.
Good morning, everyone. I'm very pleased to welcome you to this call following our announcement this morning of the sale of our student and transit businesses. As many of you know, I initiated a full strategic review of all options to unlock value for shareholders shortly after joining the board in August 2019. We subsequently launched a sale process for our North American contract businesses in March last year, and whilst COVID inevitably delayed the process, we've been working hard behind the scenes to ensure that momentum and competitive tension was maintained and that a full strategic value was achieved for these high-quality and resilient assets. This transaction clearly delivers on the board's strategy to rationalise the portfolio and resolve the long-standing liabilities of the group, which, as you will know, are significant and have inevitably been impacted by the pandemic, whilst also giving us the opportunity to return value back to shareholders. And importantly, it will also leave a focused, well-positioned and appropriately capitalised retained company that can go forward from here and create sustainable value for all our stakeholders. As First Group enters this new strategic phase, the composition of the board will evolve. As part of that evolution, we also announced today that two new non-executive directors will be joining the board at the end of June. As chairman, I'm clearly focused on ensuring we have the right balance of skills and experience for the future needs of the company. Before I hand over to Matthew to take you through the details, I want to extend my thanks to management and indeed to all our employees for their achievements in steering the company through the immense challenges of the past year. The team have done a great job, in my view, in delivering on the board's strategic objectives through this sale and in making sure the group emerges from the pandemic in the strongest possible position. Matthew, over to you to discuss the transaction in more detail, but also to provide some colour on the board's clear view of the prospects for the retained company. Thereafter, we'll open up the call to questions. Thank you, Matthew.
Great. Thanks, David. And thanks, everyone, for joining us on what is an important day for First Group. First off, I'm going to run through the headline details of the transaction and the key deal terms. I'll also discuss how we propose to use the proceeds from the transaction. And then, finally, I'll spend some time reviewing the retained business and what the board sees as its strong credentials and prospects. The presentation is published on our website, and so I'll try to preface my comments with the slide number to help navigate to the particular section I'm referring to. So let's turn to the deal itself, starting on page 2. Yesterday, we signed a contract for the sale of First and First Transit to EQT Infrastructure for a headline price of $4.6 billion. As I'm sure you're all aware, EQT is one of the world's largest global infrastructure funds. This transaction is in line with our portfolio rationalization strategy as the best means of unlocking value. We're pleased to have achieved a full strategic valuation for these high-quality assets, which is reflected in the multiple of 8.9 times 2020 EBITDA on a pre-IFRS 16 basis. The transaction enables First Group to address its long-standing liabilities, which include the North American pensions and self-insurance, as well as de-risk the UK defined benefit pension schemes and repay our CCFF loan to the Bank of England and significantly reduce our levels of debt. The transaction also enables a return of value to shareholders in the current calendar year. As we look ahead, the retained business will be an attractive company with a strong platform on which to create value. The role of public transport in delivering the UK's economic, social and environmental agendas has never been clearer, and the policy backdrop has never been more supportive. We are a leading bus and rail operator in the UK. We have plans in place to drive greater efficiencies and performance improvements throughout our business, and therefore we are well placed to capture the many opportunities ahead of us. In summary, the retained group will be a sustainable and cash-generative business with a well-capitalized balance sheet and an operating model that will support an attractive dividend. So moving now on to page 3. This transaction delivers on the board's strategy. You'll recall we completed a full review of all options and determined that portfolio rationalisation, and ultimately the sale of Student and Transit, was the best means to unlock the value. The sale we've announced today has come after a comprehensive and competitive process and recognises the fundamental long-term strategic value of the two businesses, despite the impact of COVID-19 over the past year. So turning to the deal terms, the businesses are being sold together, including the joint administration function that serves both, for a headline price of $4.6 billion. From this gross value, there are a number of deductions that reflect the debt-like items attached to the business. We show these on the table below. Firstly, the buyer will take full responsibility for the self-insurance provision linked to Student and Transit, valued at $500 million. These transfer with the business. In addition, $240 million of the above gross value has been tied to the future valuation of First Transit and allows us to share in any value creation of that business. After deducting Transit's insurance provision, EQT will pay over a net amount of $370 million on closing, and then First Group will share in any increase in value thereafter. The amount shared will be subject to an independent valuation of Transit within 3 years, or a disposal value if it's sold on before that point, and the maximum $240 million is paid over if the earn-out valuation reaches $750 million. The buyer is also assuming a number of other existing debt-like items, largely relating to a supplier credit facility of $220 million and finance leases of $85 million, totaling $305 million. And finally, a combination of deferred capex and government tax payables of $110 million, which we were able to delay as a result of COVID, a working capital adjustment arising from the lockbox mechanism that's anticipated to be around $150 million, as well as the First Group America pension scheme and other provisions and transaction costs, result in a further deduction of around $400 million. After deducting these items, we will have generated net proceeds of $3.1 billion or £2.2 billion. Turning over the page to page four, before running you through the detail, it's worth highlighting that the board has focused on five principal considerations as they determined the use of proceeds from this transaction. These considerations are as follows. Returning value to shareholders, recognising the value of the sale of the businesses. Secondly, the need to address the substantial legacy liabilities of the group, including expensive debt, North American pensions and insurance provisions, as well as the rail termination sums. The need to pay back the Bank of England's £300 million CCFF commercial paper. And making a responsible contribution to address the UK bus pension scheme deficit, which has relied upon parent company guarantees backed up by the student and transit cash flows. And finally, to ensure that the retained group has adequate resources in the short term whilst our markets continue to face COVID-related challenges. So turning to slide five, there's a table to show you in more detail how we see these proceeds being used. So let's just work down the table. Point one. Firstly, we will reduce the group's indebtedness. You'll have noted from our RNS that we are flagging that we expect our 31st of March 2021 adjusted profits to be ahead of expectations, and that we continue to actively manage cash and facilities to maintain a robust financial position and strong liquidity. At the 31st of March 2021, the group has net debt of £1.4 billion before rail ring-fence cash, and on a pre-IFRS 16 basis. £220 million of this will transfer with the US businesses, which I noted on the previous slide. Of the existing £1.4 billion debt, we'll be retaining the 2024 £200 million sterling bond, as well as £44 million of UK bus finance leases to provide finance for the retained group. Therefore, we will repay the government's £300 million CCFF paper, the recent £250 million bridge facility that was drawn down to repay the £350 million April 2021 bond, and the £325 million sterling bond from 2022, as well as the £200 million US private placement, £120 million bilateral loans, £450 million repayment to the RCF, all offset by existing cash at bank. So all in all, this nets to a repayment of £935 million of debt. On point two on the table, this shows that the debt repayment will incur a total of £65 million of make-whole costs for the £325 million sterling bond and the USPP. Next, as point three shows, we propose to retain £345 million, which is sufficient to de-risk our Greyhound business, manage short-term capital requirements as we continue to manage our way through the pandemic, and pay our rail termination sums, which, due to the extension of the South West Railway and TPE IRMAs, they were not paid by the 31st of March 2021. At this point, let me touch on Greyhound. I can confirm that Greyhound remains a non-core asset, and we continue to pursue all options to exit this business. In the meantime, we'll be retaining £180 million to cover the net liabilities of Greyhound. This allows us to de-risk the legacy pension, as well as substantially buy out historic self-insurance liabilities, leaving a better capitalized balance sheet. As the only intercity bus operator in the US, the government continued to provide funding for Greyhound to maintain its national network, and we're continuing to actively manage the property portfolio for value. So this leaves us with net proceeds of £845 million, from which we've agreed to make a substantial contribution to the UK pension schemes, return value to shareholders, while leaving an appropriate cash and therefore net debt position in the context of the potential ongoing effects of the pandemic on the retained group. So item four on the table, following detailed and constructive negotiations with the trustees of our UK bus and group pension schemes, we've reached an agreement to make cash contributions that move these schemes to a low dependency position. We've sought to achieve a balance of an appropriate contribution whilst avoiding overfunding in the event of outperformance of the schemes. As a result, we've agreed a cash payment of £220 million to the UK bus scheme, with a further £95 million being paid into escrow, which could be returned in the event of a positive valuation in 4 years' time. In addition, we've agreed a £21 million escrow payment for the much smaller group pension scheme with a similar repayment mechanism. In determining the return of value to shareholders, we've made a sensible assessment of the cash required to settle other liabilities, as well as the prudent liquidity position I mentioned a moment ago. We intend to maintain pro forma net debt, based on our view of the coming year, of £100 million. Given that we're keeping £200 million 2024 bond and £45 million of bus finance leases, this naturally means we'll be retaining cash of around £150 million. Taking all of this into account, we're proposing a return to shareholders of £365 million, or 30 pence per share, once the deal has completed. This is a responsible and fair approach to resolving our legacy liabilities, debt obligations, the pension schemes, and the ongoing needs of the business, as well as returning value to our shareholders. It's important to note, though, that there remains the potential for further distributions of value to shareholders in due course as we resolve Greyhound, crystallise the transit earnout, and as UK end markets recover. So turning to page six, let me lay out how we see things proceeding from this point. The transaction is conditional on the approval of First Group shareholders, as well as a number of North American regulatory approvals. We expect the shareholder circular to be published as soon as practical, with the shareholder meeting to approve the transaction anticipated to be held towards the end of May. We'd expect the buyer to receive all the regulatory approvals and the completion of the transaction during the second half of the calendar year. The return of value to shareholders following completion would take place during this calendar year. As is common in these situations, we'll consult with our major shareholders as to the appropriate distribution mechanism. So, having covered the main details of the transaction and our intended use of proceeds, I want to turn to the retained group and the board's view of its future prospects. As David said at the outset, this transaction will leave the retained business well placed to create sustainable value for all of our stakeholders. As you'll see on slide 8, we've laid out the key pillars of our investment case and have set out more details on each pillar on the subsequent slides. So let me just give you some more colour on each. Turning to slide 9 and our first pillar. Our business has a leading position in both bus and rail in the UK. In bus, we have a share of around 20% of the regional bus market, serving two-thirds of the UK's 15 largest conurbations, operating more than 5,000 vehicles with around 15,000 employees. In rail, we're the UK's largest operator, with four DfT contracted operations and a market share of around 27%. This gives us a strong platform from which to grow revenues and our business. We have a professional and experienced management team in each business, with our bus division led by Jeanette Bell, who joined us at the end of last year, and rail led by Steve Montgomery. Moving to slide 10. We're at a critical inflection point for public transport, with the pandemic only serving to reinforce the need to build back better. It's clear that public transport is integral to driving economic growth, particularly in towns and cities that have been left behind. Government and social policy is demanding that we build back better and greener, and that efforts to level up the economy need to redouble. The English National Bus Strategy, with its £3 billion of funding, and the Scottish Bus funding schemes that we recently won a large proportion of, together with the changes to the rail franchising model, all help demonstrate that ambitious government policy and fiscal support will place public transport centre stage. The third point on our investment case on slide 11 reflects the role of digital innovation in attracting more customers and ensuring we're operating as efficiently as possible. Previous examples include real-time seat capacity and tap-and-cap ticketing in First Bus, and we continue to drive further improvements to the digital offering that will greatly enhance the customer experience and remove friction points. In rail, we've developed industry-leading 5G technology to dramatically improve internet capability on the railways, and part of the SWR network will be the first to receive the new technology, followed by Avanti later. The next two points focus on the business model for each division. In First Bus, we were already well on the way to our 10% margin target before the pandemic interrupted progress, and you can see the trajectory on slide 12. While some uncertainty will remain in the short term, we were encouraged by passenger volumes that reached 60% of pre-pandemic levels in a number of regions when restrictions eased somewhat last summer. Our studies indicate that the vast majority of passengers intend to return to bus travel post-pandemic, and our central planning assumption is that passenger volumes will reach between 80 to 90% of pre-pandemic levels during the first year after social distancing restrictions on buses end. We'll be working with local authorities to realign networks to reflect new demand levels and to ensure that bus prioritisation measures are fully assessed and introduced. From a cost perspective, we're focusing on making the business more efficient, as well as implementing new engineering and scheduling systems that will transform the ability to plan and manage the business. We are taking the opportunity to accelerate cost efficiency plans where practical during the pandemic, and review poorer performing routes and networks in readiness for when volumes return. Turning to rail, on slide 13, we're pleased that the government has taken the opportunity to accelerate the much-needed changes to the franchising model during the pandemic. As you know, we've long advocated for a better balance of risk and reward, with a greater focus on the customer. Then the transition away from franchises, via the emergency measures, through to the national rail contracts, goes a long way to achieving this. And as the largest operator with four contracted operations, which are expected to be in place until at least 2023, we will benefit from this long-awaited transition. We've highlighted some of the key differences between the old franchising system and the emerging national rail contract structure. And the key point is that the new structure will have no revenue risk and minimal cost risk, as well as a vastly reduced contingent capital requirement. The national rail contracts will be concession-based, with operators earning an annual management fee and a performance incentive. The overall fee will be the equivalent to a low single-digit margin, similar to the existing IRMAs, but will drive greater consistency in terms of profit and cash, giving greater resilience. Moving on to slide 14. Over and above our strong position in our existing markets, our investment case looks at further opportunities that will be available to the business once revenue levels have stabilised. The bus business will look to maximise its current footprint through further tenders and B2B opportunities that will arise, and rail will continue to develop its open access footprint, as well as 5G technological capabilities, consulting and call centres. Finally, and perhaps most importantly on slide 15, First Group stands ready as a critical enabler of society's ESG goals. We have a clear social purpose. And through our Mobility Beyond Today's sustainability framework, we are setting out to be the partner of choice, building on our strong credentials to play a leading role in accelerating the transition to a zero-carbon world. Turning to slide 16, this investment case underpins our financial framework, and I'll take you through the details. From a revenue perspective, we expect bus volumes to return to between 80 to 90% of pre-pandemic levels during the first year after social distancing on buses ends, with further growth thereafter. In terms of profitability, we've made good progress and have clear, achievable plans to reach a 10% EBIT margin in bus. Rail margins reflect the lower risk nature of the new framework, and represent a more stable and resilient profit and cash flow. And the smaller retained group will naturally lead to a lower central cost, aligned to our work to decentralise appropriate responsibilities into the divisions. Turning to our investment plans, we expect to invest around £90 million per annum on new buses as we transition the fleet from diesel technology to zero-emission buses, along with the appropriate funding from government to assist with this. The concept of rail capex remains unchanged. Whilst we will have to account for capex according to the accounting principles, the group will not be responsible for any rail capital investment as it will continue to be funded through the train operating company contracts with the DfT. Moving on to our leverage and dividend, we intend to base our policies on cash-based definitions. This might be considered to be more complex than using headline P&L values. However, this will ensure that we're tying our leverage and return profiles to the actual cash generation of the business that flows through to the group. And the reason for this, as you know, is that under the new arrangement, Rail's income is better considered in terms of the cash dividends that each TOC can pay over to the PLC, reflecting the fees earned. As a result, our leverage policy will be based on maintaining net debt at less than 2x a very specific EBITDA measure, which we'll report in detail within our results. And the EBITDA measure will represent bus and non-contracted rail EBITDA plus the contracted rail dividends less the PLC's central costs. Turning to the dividend, we're clear that the retained group's financial profile will be able to support a regular dividend to shareholders and expect to be able to do so from the 2023 financial year as conditions normalise post-pandemic. We'll be targeting a dividend payment which will be around 3x covered by a new adjusted profit after tax measure. Similar to the leverage measure, this will be focused on effective cash rather than income measures. And this measure will be defined as bus and non-contracted rail adjusted operating profit, plus the contracted rail dividends, minus central costs, interest and tax. And again, we'll give full disclosure on this measure in our accounts. In summary, we expect the retained group to be a cash generative business with a well-capitalized balance sheet capable of supporting an attractive dividend. So finally, on slide 16, let me conclude by saying that this transaction allows us to deliver on the board's strategy to rationalise the portfolio, achieving a full strategic value for our long-term and high-quality student and transit business. This enables us to significantly de-risk the group and address the substantial legacy liabilities in a responsible way. And shareholders will receive 30 pence per share of return of value, and there is the potential for further capital return when end markets recover. And their retained group is well placed to create sustainable value and support an attractive dividend. So thank you for listening, and now I'll turn it over for questions, please.
Thank you. If you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on the telephone keypad now. If you do wish to withdraw your question, you can do so by pressing 02 on the telephone keypad. Our first question comes from line of Jared Castle from UBS. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you, and good morning, gentlemen. Three for me. You kind of said the 2021 performance is above your expectations, but any color in terms of where your expectations are now? Second question, you talk about 80 to 90% post social distancing after the first year, but any commentary on the possibility of getting back to 100%? You know, given previous structural headwinds, you know, such as working from home, congestion, and e-commerce. And then the third question, just in terms of your CapEx, the 90 million, do you think you can still get the historic returns on invested capital that you've achieved in the past as you make the transition towards green? And you know, how will that be achieved? Is it through volumes, pricing, government subsidies? Thanks.
Great. Okay. Well, thanks for that. Well, look, I think I'll cover off a couple of those points, and we'll work with Ryan on maybe adding some of the colour there. So, look, looking at the 2021 expectations, Ryan, do you want to just make a comment on that?
Yeah, we think that the analyst consensus range that we're looking at is roughly on top of the range of about £171 million. We think that we're going to come in slightly ahead of that. clearly this is a full year end, and so it will still be subject to audit. But at this stage, we are seeing our adjusted operating profit coming in slightly ahead of the top of the range of analyst consensus forecasts.
Yeah, so a good performance from the business as we've closed out the end of the financial year. So let me just cover off the 80 to 90%. So we're talking very specifically about bus. And I think the bus journeys are, you know, very different from the rail journeys. These are sort of generally intercity, they're shorter journeys. All the surveys that we've done are indicating that the vast majority of our passengers want to get back on the bus, and that we have a much lower exposure in the bus business to some of the commuting and potential sort of working from home type issues. So I think from our perspective, particularly when you look at the fact that we got up to 60% at the end of August, beginning of September, when the social distancing rules were starting to ease, you know, we're comfortable that we'll get up to that 80 to 90%. And then it's really a question of working hard with the authorities, working hard on our offering, and really, really promoting the use of the bus. But we do see the potential, again, as I talked about, the very positive environment for getting people out of their cars and onto buses, and all the funding, the first time we've had a national bus strategy. It's a really positive environment for public transport. So we think, you know, get back to 80 to 90% in the first year, and after that we do see the opportunity for growth, which is probably the first time the industry has seen that opportunity for quite a long time, actually. And then coming up to your point on CapEx, I mean, we expect to be able to make a decent return on the investment in buses, and we'd expect that to be a double-digit return. And I think what this requires, it requires a combination of, you know, our improvement in EBIT, and we've talked about our plans to improve profitability in bus. It talks about working with the local authorities to improve bus prioritization, reducing congestion, so that we can get more people attracted to coming to the bus. And then it also relies on the government funding, which again, you've seen that as part of the National Bus Strategy, the commitment to fund, you know, initially 4,000 electric vehicles, to ensure that the economics of buying new buses is not wholly placed on the bus industry. So it's a combination of many things, but I think that the primary message we give you is that the environment for bus travel and the government and social policy that's currently in place is more supportive than we've seen for many years.
And I think it's just worth adding to that, the recent investments that we're making in Glasgow and York from part of the electrification, all of the returns on those investments are into that double-digit returns post-tax that Matthew mentioned.
Thanks for that. Shall we move on to the next question?
Thank you. Our next question comes from Sathish Sivakumar from Citigroup. Please go ahead. The line is open.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for taking my questions. And yeah, congratulations on the disposal, actually. I've got three questions. So in the pension, you actually highlighted that you don't no longer see it as a risk. Just wanted to confirm that. Have you bought any insurance, like annuity plans, that so that it doesn't come up as a big advent for you, say, in 3 years' time? Is there any protection against that? And then secondly, on the Greyhound, could you share some details around the existing assets? Like, obviously, you did some depots disposal back end of last year. Are there any further opportunity, like one of depots disposal around Greyhound? And thirdly, around the first bus, on your slide 14, you talk about the adjacent UK opportunities. And I assume that it doesn't talk about anything around the inorganic. So do you see any inorganic potential, inorganic growth potential? And then just on that, on those 4 points that you listed there, what is actually the size of the market that you are trying to address there?
All right, thank you, Sathish. I'll start with the pensions. You know, we are constantly working actively with the trustee to de-risk the scheme anyway before the contribution. Following the contribution, we would be able to just de-risk the scheme even further, therefore make it less volatile to potential return of the escrow monies in the future. And so all things being equal from an actuarial perspective and expected return on plan assets plus the de-risking, we'd expect some of the escrow monies to be returned back to the group in due course.
Great. So let me cover off the Greyhound point then. You're right. We did make some big property sales at the back end of last year. We sold our Los Angeles and Denver facilities, plus a facility in Canada. And it's probably fair to say that those are two of the bigger ones that we've been working on. So the properties that we've got left are probably a much sort of smaller. There's a number of them, but much smaller smaller assets to us. I mean, what I'd say about Greyhound, look, I mean, we are committed to continue pursuing our exit of that. We talked about retaining money to cover the historic pension insurance liabilities, so that de-risks that Greyhound balance sheet. And there are still opportunities on the property side, and we're working hard to sort of find a way through that. I think I'll comment on the bus side. Look, you're right. We comment around sort of international or inorganic potential. I think the key thing for us is, you know, we need to get through this initial or exit the COVID situation. We need, you know, we're very pleased to have got this transaction done at a very, very good valuation. It allows us to deal with these legacy liabilities. And by the time we're through that, and by the time we're through COVID, we feel that we'll be in a position that the business will be more stable, but we have to get there first. From that point, once we've got a stable and de-risk position, we can then look at the opportunities around the bus market, the rail market, and you know, we're not ruling out the fact there may be sort of inorganic opportunities out there. And just to come to your sort of your final point, you know, the size of the UK bus market is around that sort of £3.5 billion, and you know, we're a 20% player in that regional space. But again, the thing with bus, it's all about getting people out of their cars and getting onto the buses. We've got a very supportive public transport policy at the moment, and we're very encouraged by the amount of money that's being put by the government and the work that's being done to really encourage the use of public transport. And that will grow the market, and that's what we all want to see.
Yeah, thank you very much. So just on the adjacent UK opportunity, if I have a couple of questions. Just a follow-up on that. So you mentioned about the B2B private contract, so and then charter projects and third-party EV vehicle charging. What does that actually imply in terms of revenue stream? What will be the percentage portion of that new revenues coming from this additional stream?
Yeah, I mean, these are very good questions, and I understand the points. I mean, obviously today we're really laying out the transaction that we've done, and that you know, that's the key part of the conversation today is about the transaction. But we did want to give people a view and a sense of our investment case. So what we're highlighting here are opportunities that we can get into as we work through the pandemic and we stabilize the group. But to come back to your specific points, I mean, we already have a business that does a lot of B2B private charters. We're the largest sort of rail replacement bus operator. We have a business that gets involved in specific one-off charter projects. You know, we got involved in Commonwealth Games, we got involved in the Olympics, and there's opportunity to grow into that marketplace. And these are multi sort of 100 million addressable markets. The third point about electric vehicle charging, mobility as a service, autonomous vehicles, these are all very nascent markets in the UK. So we're making sure we're keeping abreast of the developments, getting involved in pilots as these markets start to get off the ground. So look, what it's telling us is there's just a lot of opportunity out there. Once we stabilize the business and de-risk the business, it will be very well placed to benefit from those opportunities.
Okay, thank you. Perfect. That's helpful.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Gerard Culp from Liberum. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Morning all. Three questions if I can. Firstly, on leverage, you talked about sort of target leverage on your new definition of under 2x. And also you talked about pro forma net debt of 100 million. That I assume is well south of 2x on the new basis. How do you go from the 100 million to up to 2x? Is that the sort of headroom that you've allowed yourself to get through the rest of COVID? Have you got other headroom that you've reserved for something else? Just trying to understand what would get you up to your target leverage. Secondly, can you just confirm whether EQT has owned anything that potentially overlaps and whether there's any antitrust issue that we need to be conscious of here. And finally, you talked about 10% margin in First Bus in due course. What have you assumed in terms of any transition arrangement after CBSSG within that? And generally, you know, are you still expecting the government to be forthcoming with some transition funding after CBSSG ends? Thanks.
Sure. Okay, well, let me take the second two of those first, then we'll talk about the leverage point, which Ryan will chip in as well. So look, I think from the buyer perspective, it's interesting, this transaction sold to a major infrastructure fund is the first significant transaction of a student bus business by an infrastructure fund. So that's encouraging because it sort of moves the marketplace. It's a bit of a innovative transaction here. So know that we're not expecting any regulatory issues from that. In terms of the bus margin, I mean, we're obviously expecting funding from the government until social distancing is called to a halt. We're then expecting transition funding to enable us to agree partnerships with the local authorities. And from that point, you know, we're expecting to go back onto the full commercial model. So looking at the leverage point, I mean, yeah, you're right. We have taken a view on our leverage, and it is below the 2x because we're still in a position where there is a COVID crisis going on. We're still working our way through that. You know, we performed well this year, very well, I think, in a number of our businesses. But there's still a little bit of uncertainty out there. And in terms of how we sort of get up to that 2x leverage, well, we'll just have to continue trading through the end of the pandemic. We'll be looking to complete this transaction. We'll be looking to resolve some of these issues, like Greyhound, for example, and then we'll be able to assess our leverage position based on the sort of economic outlook and the business performance. Anything you want to add on that, Ryan?
You know, just the journey towards electrification and the ESG agenda in bus, that clearly does consume some capital. Whilst we're expecting those returns on these new investments to be in a double-digit post-tax, that clearly consumes some debt up front as we navigate our way from the crisis into the 10% sustainable margins post-crisis.
Thanks, Gerald. Should we take the next question?
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Joe Thomas from HSBC. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Good morning, Matthew, Ryan and David. Congratulations on getting this concluded.
Thanks, Jack.
Just a few bits I wanted to ask you about on the detail, if you wouldn't mind. The first thing I just wanted to ask you on, I think these probably for Ryan, but if we choose whoever wants to answer them. Can you just clarify the remaining liabilities that stay in the business? The likes of sort of insurance provisions, legal provisions, etc. I'm not exactly sure where they are. That would be the first one. Second one is, if I look at the slide, which is in the appendix, showing the pro forma statement of net assets, it looks like total net assets drop. Can you clarify why that is? I'm guessing it's the dividend, but I'm not sure. HQ costs, how do they change as a result of this? And then finally, on the bus business, bigger picture question. If you end up at an 80 to 90% revenue number or kind of volume number, recovering to those sorts of levels, what sort of margin would that, do you think that would imply in the near term?
Yeah, well, why don't I carry that, deal with that bus question first? I mean, what we're expecting is a transition. So as we work up towards that 80 to 90%, we would expect to have been supported by continuing of the CBSSG grant coming through. they're also giving us the time to put in place and see the benefit of the efficiency programs that were started sort of well before the pandemic. So we would expect by the time we get to the end of that first year to be getting very well towards that double-digit margin, because you'll have the combination of coming off the CBSSG, you have the combination of the volumes and revenues increasing, but also our cost measures coming in, the scheduling efficiencies, the network rationalizations, you know, as we move around the networks to reflect, you know, the changes in demand, the work we're doing on our engineering system. So we'd expect that to be going up towards the double-digit margin during by the end of that first year. We're going to have to work through this clearly, because we just at this stage we don't know when the social distancing stops, and we don't know when this all starts kicking off. But I think, you know, what I would say is that the plans are very much in place to get the cost efficiencies working and getting people back on the bus. So Ryan, did you want to cover the first three more technical points?
Yeah, on the liabilities that remain, Joe, the pension deficit's clearly been dealt with in the UK, and we'll actually end up carrying a surplus for the bus scheme as well as the group scheme, and as a consequence of the escrow arrangements, we'd be able to recognise that surplus, because that can be returned back to the group in due course. As you know, the local government pension schemes were already in surplus and recognised as a surplus on the balance sheet, so that would be an asset, net asset enhancing as far as the pensions are concerned. For the remaining liabilities, from an insurance exposure perspective, all that will remain is the unfunded Greyhound liability for insurance, to the extent that we haven't bought those historical losses out. And the reason why we're not planning on buying those historical losses out just yet, because they describe as what are green claims or green incidents, where there's not been sufficient amount of discovery, and so the pricing then doesn't work very efficiently and effectively to do a loss portfolio transfer. From a legal exposure point of view, there's any legal exposures left from the organisation. Any of those exposures would be transferring across with, that we would have had from a legacy point of view, would be transferring across with the student and transit business sale. So they effectively are taking the entire student and transit businesses, including the legacy insurance. So no liabilities left there. In terms of the net asset change, you're quite right. The biggest contributing factor for the net assets going on a pro forma basis, and just as a reminder, this is pro forma too, from September rather than where we're going to end up in March, which we clearly will announce with our full year results announcement in due course. But the principal change there is the return of value to shareholders of £365 million. But there were also the costs relating to RemainCo and establishing RemainCo as a no longer a multinational but UK-focused. And there are costs of buying out the pension and insurance obligations for Greyhound, which are further contribute to the slight negative being the delta.
Then the HQ costs?
Then the HQ costs, we're expecting to be approximately £10 million will come out of the HQ costs following completion of the transaction, as we've become a much more focused UK company.
Okay, thanks for that. And just, sorry, Matthew, just on the first point on UK bus. So to be clear, you get sort of 80-90%, you can still make it, getting close to a double-digit margin on that sort of level of volume, but that would be the result of kind of network, kind of cutting back the network and putting fares up. I'm just, with one eye on the history of First Group, I'm just sort of a little bit nervous about that.
Yeah, sure. So it's predominantly focused on cost reduction measures. So it's around addressing poorer performing networks, which is always a combination of fares and cost reductions. It's around removing sort of unprofitable routes. It's around more efficient scheduling and more flexible working. And it's around new sort of engineering management systems. So it's a broad range of cost reduction measures that we are putting in place, and a large percentage of them were sort of ready to go at the time that the pandemic hit. So we're ready to go with that. We're not starting from scratch.
Thanks a lot.
Great, thank you.
Great, thanks, Joe.
Should we take the next question? Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if you do wish to ask a question, please press 01 on telephone keypad now. Our next question comes from line of Laurie Cullinan from RBC. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Hi, good morning. Congratulations on the sale. Just a couple of questions remaining. Firstly, could you sort of talk a little bit more around the sensitivities around the earnout payment? And secondly, you mentioned your sort of well-capitalized de-risk balance sheet in the release. Beyond what you've touched on already, are there any areas of the remaining business where you'd particularly like to step up investment now?
Yeah, well, thanks for that. Yeah, so in terms of the earnout, I think we've laid out that there's $240 million of earnout attached to the transit business, and this is effectively allowing us to share in any upside in the value creation for transit over the next 3 years. And the way it's working is that we will share the upside between $370 million and $750 million on a sliding scale, effectively. But we're comfortable that there's a lot of value in transit. It's done very well this year. It has a good prospects, and we're looking forward to sort of making some money from that earnout. I think in terms of the opportunities, I mean, we think, as I said earlier in the statement, we do need to get through this continued COVID crisis. We need to stabilise the business. We need to sort of complete on this transaction and affect these de-risking opportunities. But at that point, we do see a number of opportunities in the business. But we'll be a leading player in UK bus and rail. We've laid out there are some B2B operations, tender operations in bus. We've laid out there this new 5G technology that we're implementing on rail, opportunities around consulting. And then as things are stable and we look at the future, there could be opportunities around potential inorganic growth or sort of other international expansion. So we see quite a lot of opportunity in both of these businesses once we're through this initial crisis period. Great, thanks. Should we take the next question?
Our next question comes from line of Alex Patterson from Peel Farm. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Yeah, morning everybody. Apologies, I've missed some parts of the call, so if you've done this to death already, then apologies. Just on the net debt pro forma after this of about 100 million, does that include the cash in rail, which is restricted, and therefore if that was excluded, would the pro forma net debt be, say, 700 million?
No.
And Alex, it doesn't include any cash or any restricted cash relating to rail. This is purely group cash. And I hope you picked up the nuance in the report. We're trying to sort of, as a consequence of doing the transaction, debunk some of the previous methodologies of reporting rail. We very much focus just purely on what are the flows of rail that are applicable to the group and its investors and its shareholders. So, whilst the franchises under the NRC will more likely than not still be consolidated on the basis that they will still be 100% owned SPVs of the group or with minorities, so the ring-fenced cash and all of the assets of the rail franchises will still be on our balance sheet. Our focus is very much on an adjusted basis, what is attributable to the shareholders of the group. So it's a very clean number that everybody can understand, both from a gearing perspective as well as a dividend policy perspective on a go-forward basis.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Alex.
Thank you. We have no more questions from the lines. I will hand it back to Matthew. Please go ahead with your closing comments.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for joining us. Appreciate your time today. As you can tell, we're very pleased to be able to talk about this transaction that really is a milestone for First Group. So thank you very much for your time, and we look forward to speaking to you at our full year results.